report in the plenary and in the library. But from now until the 28th of June, we've got a very active program, Comet program. And the Secretariat, did you mail the program to members? You must please do that. That is a crucial starting point, because that's the diary. And do it immediately, to the Secretariat, please, because of the PAC program that we have. We also welcome in our midst a new addition to our support staff, Mrs. Chubuli Makalina, our new researcher. She must stand up. She's from the Northwest. Is she here?
No, not yet.
Okay, but she's here. I met them yesterday. And then also appointed the head of the research unit is Dr. Tanya Adam. We know her in a former capacity when she was employed by the FFC, Financial and Fiscal Position. So also welcome to her. Up to today, we had the briefing on the Division of Revenue Bill 2018, and then we conducted public hearings in the nine provinces. My province, Northern Cape, we had five public hearings on the 10th and the 11th of April. I could attend two of them. Because of distances, I couldn't attend the other three. It was just not possible. Today we have in front of us, for this hearing, Kagiso Trust, they are here, and then also Equal Education. But we also received a written submission from Mr. Matala, here it is, but the person is not here, but we received that. I want to make the following remark, that the committee welcomed the appointment by the president of the Group of New Investment Envoys to drive a program to seek $100 billion in new investment for South Africa. As part of a campaign also to enhance trust, confidence for foreign investors, but also for domestic investors. The team is overseen by Mrs. Trudy Makaya, and we wish the team well in the important role they're going to play and the program that's being rolled out. It's our responsibility to see that money is spent wisely. And to have a division of revenue, there must be revenue to divide. Otherwise, there's no division of revenue. There must be revenue in the country. It doesn't matter which country it is. So, all the members, with those words, welcome. Secretary's apologies.
Two apologies.
One is from Mr. President.
And the second one from Mr. Nzimande.
Who?
Nzimande.
This is written apologies. Yes. I put the apologies to the committee. We accept it. Thank you. Thank you. That's accepted. Kagiso Trust. Yes, sir. Sorry.
Mr. Kassanov, what is the reason that, you know, when I every time look at the Z list, I don't get our minutes, our meetings listed.
You don't get what?
Our meetings on the Z list. Both finance and appropriation.
This morning Z list had it. Yesterday there was a problem.
There was a problem
yesterday. I had a MANCOM meeting with the whole team, finance and appropriations. It was not on yesterday morning.
Yeah, it was not.
Because that's one of the first documents I check in the morning before I even start anything. I check it, the ATC, the Z list, etc. But notices of this meeting has been sent last week already with documentation as part of that. Welcome also to National Treasury, Stephen. You're always welcome. You're part of the finance family. Thank you. Kagiso Trust, are you ready? Honourable members, you've got the presentation, this one. You may start. We're going to give you 25 minutes to do your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. Thank you for granting us an opportunity to make inputs to the Division of Revenue Bill. The presentation is quite short, and we just trying to make sure that we become...
Please introduce your team.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm with Zandile Makojwa. We're in the Programs Management and Research Unit. Unfortunately, the CEO is held up with education conversation on Fourth Industrial Revolution, so she couldn't be here. Thank you so much, Chair. I would like to give briefly a short history of Kagiso Trust as presented in the PowerPoint presentation. Kagiso Trust was started over 30 years ago by a handful of church leaders at the time when South Africa needed support, South Africans needed support in terms of community support during the highest level of apartheid incidences, and it was funded by external international donors. But over the years, due to drying up of funds, the trust developed a strategy for financial sustainability where it reinvested the few monies that they had left by buying shares so that they can make revenue to sustain the programs that they were implementing. And it is based on this financial sustainability approach and model that Kagiso is funding its programs. And it has instituted a number of programs over the years, the education which we called Bayers Nodier, an education program named after one of the founders. And we also introduced Eric Mulodi Scholarship Program that offers the poorest of the poor school going learners for bursaries for tertiary. And our focus have been on subjects like accountancy, economics, maths, and physical science. But recently we have introduced agriculture and scholarship for students who are doing agriculture. And we are also now moving into the early childhood development in order to make sure that our whole school development program covers all phases or the pipeline of education, and also making sure that education is sustainable throughout the years. And the second page there, I have just a highlight of Kagiso Trust mission and vision. And I'll just look at the vision, which says our vision is towards a prosperous, peaceful, and equitable and just society. And that we do by our core programs, which is supporting education development initiatives, the socioeconomic development program, support of capacity support of civil society and local government, as well as ensuring that the sustainability programs. In the third slide is just an indication of the approach of how Kagiso Trust operates. We have, with board's request, now moved from programs, because that one we have established our grounds and we have our expertise well grounded, that we now move into contributing to creating knowledge through research and thought leadership. And therefore, we are getting into more research activities in order to make sure that our programs are grounded into developments in the country and globally. And therefore, when we develop programs and evaluate them, we make sure that they are grounded on models, and models which can be adopted by any institution or government, because they will be resembling best practice in terms of changing the lives of our people. On slide 4 is an indication of our programs, which is our core functions. As I indicated earlier, we participate in contribution to education. The first program there is Bayers Nodia School Development Program, where we support schools in provinces in partnership with education departments, where we co-fund the curriculum development support of schools. We will also support the leadership development of school leaders as well as school learners leaders, but also where we contribute to infrastructure development and infrastructure such as building laboratories, science laboratory and libraries. And the second program is Eric Mulovi Scholarship Program, where I indicated that we do offer a few scholarships to best performing matriculants in the subject of accountancy, maths, physical science, and recently this year we started with supporting scholars who are enrolled for BSc in agriculture. And this year we're also starting with early childhood development. We will be piloting this program, and mainly here we would like to support early childhood development centers in standardizing their performance so that they meet the requirements of a quality early childhood development center. We are also entering the technical high school development program with the intention to assist students and learners to be able to have access to opportunities to exit if they don't want to, for example, continue with tertiary education. And therefore, this program on technical high school is our contribution to exit opportunities for students. And we know that government is also considering resuscitating the technical high school program. The second program is socioeconomic development, where we do CAPEF, which is rural funding of businesses. This is an old program that has been there, where we fund emerging businesses in terms of capacitating them in terms of financial, and where we also funded partnerships with that in ensure that there's a participation of black emerging businesses. We have also started recently with enterprise development, with agriculture and real estate. Here, the intention was really to formalize the informal. For example, in real estate, you would find that you have plumbers, you have electricians who are expert in those areas, but they are not in the formal system, and therefore they are not able to grow their businesses to compete with big commercials. So our intention is, using the model that we have developed on socioeconomic development, is to contribute to development of emerging businesses in agriculture and real estate or construction to an extent that begins to assist them to grow, instead of being just remaining in the informal settlement and, I mean, in the informal business, but also working just for hand to mouth. The other program that we're involved in is support. It's institutional support in civil society. In the past few years, we have supported civil society organizations like South African Women in Dialogue, Tswarana, and the SSCC, South African Council of Churches, in terms of their programs, but also advising them on how to become financially sustainable, just like AFISA has become as a non-profit organization. In the local government, we have been involved in assisting municipalities in the billing system using an electronic or a computerized system that helps them clean their database of clients, in order for them to be able to do proper billing, so that they also eliminate billing or bills that reflect the indigent community that are not supposed to be paying some of these bills, like the free basic electricity. And with local government, we are also entering on the request of Board of Kagiso Trust that we should now focus on helping communities to contribute to local government or municipalities' performance. So we're looking at partnering with municipalities on local economic development programs where opportunities arise, we could co-fund with local municipality on economic development opportunities for the community instead of focusing more on the municipal offices themselves. And this would, in a way, link with the socio-economic development program that we have. The final program is financial sustainability, which is mainly an internal program of where we invest the money that we have so that we're able to generate revenue to reinvest into programs that we implement the programs, but also to be able to have funds to co-fund with government and any other partner, including the private sector, where we want to implement programs. And with this program, what we have done is we have now entered into Africa. We're working with a trust or a foundation in Kenya, which is called Kenya, I forgot the exact name, but we are investing in Kenya as a partner to one of the Kenyan foundations there, so that they can also get into the approach of financial sustainability. On slide 5, I'm just going to indicate the areas of interest for the reason for our submission is that we want to contribute to public interest issues, improvement and quality of education, participate in emerging national and regional international issues of interest where we contribute either information but also participate in related programs such as the, you know, we're looking at what would be the effect of free education, what necessary support would government need as add-on from non-profit organizations, issues of free trade, how do we understand it, and how do the communities leverage as they enter the businesses on those kind of trends that I imagine of free trade, but also looking at the impact of things like fourth industrial revolution. How do we embrace these changes, the global changes, in our programs, but also working with government and communities? We also interested in issues of food security and nutrition. Hence, we are involved or getting involved in supporting the agriculture businesses. We also looking at poverty eradication, economic participation, and job creation, as well as access to quality and affordable public services. And as I indicated in the local government program, where we found that the database of local municipalities would have indigent households in those billing systems, as we thought using that target, we could look at how we then assist indigent communities to get out of the cycle of poverty. Two main key interests for us for the submission, and excluding the last point really, which is the highlight of focus area, is that we'd like to make a submission for the bill to consider the opportunity for co-funding with the state for development initiatives, and meaning that we would like to see how the bill can provide for such a partnership in terms of where we have programs that we implement that can be co-funded with ease without having to go and tender for programs. Because in most of our programs, in fact, all of them except the data billing system with municipalities, we don't make any money from the programs that we implement in communities, hence the co-funding. So every fund that you get from a potential partner is used solely for those interventions. But also requesting that the bill consider the provision of non-profit organizations in the service level agreement between provinces and municipalities on grants, reference to page 86 in the revenue bill, where there was mention of service level agreement that municipalities would have with provinces on grants. The last point on that page is making input for provision of stakeholder partnership in the bill. And it's really just substantiating the point I've raised above to say that in the revenue bill, there's Schedule 5, Part A, Vote 40, where there's reference to stakeholder partnership, and that's where we got a cue to say it is possible for the bill to provide that, but it will be good for us to see it provided in all other provisions in the bill. This I'll skip because I've already talked to our focus area and deliver areas. Basically, this on the slide 6 are some of the issues, actually most of the issues, all of the issues that are mentioned in the revenue bill except for research partnership support at the last bullet, but most of the deliver areas and focus areas are mentioned in the revenue bill. On slide 7, this is where we make recommendations for the revenue, additional revenue bill to consider. But basically, our main input is to request that a provision be made in terms of setting a phrase or a clause that says in partnership with relevant stakeholders, as it has been done in Vote 40. And for example, in Schedule 5, Part A, Vote 24, that talks to agriculture, we strongly feel that if the provision is included in terms of inserting a phrase, it will ease the partnership process between non-profit organization that plays in those areas in terms of co-funding. And the second bullet on Schedule 5, Part A, Vote 37, which talks to libraries, We participate a great deal in education and would like an ease of participation and supporting government with co-funding of this kind of infrastructure support, and therefore we are submitting that a consideration be made that the bill provide for insertion of a phrase based on page 49 of the Divisional Revenue Bill. The insertion of a phrase that says in partnership with relevant stakeholders. And the last bullet is Schedule 5, Part A, Vote 17. We talk to early childhood development. Our submission is that as well, in the same way as the other votes, that consideration be made to insert that clause that says in partnership with relevant stakeholders as it has been done in Vote 40, because we strongly believe that if an act or a bill provides for this, it makes it easy when you engage with government in terms of negotiating partnerships and co-funding of these interventions. On slide 7, bullet 1, the bill should provide for and incorporate phase with relevant stakeholders on votes that will contribute. For example, as an emerging issue, the fourth industrial revolution, it would be good for a country to begin institutionalizing within provinces or, you know, accessible centers that our communities and especially young people get exposed to what fourth industrial revolution is rather than wait to have an impact on it. So we'd like that to be considered where feasible in terms of technology advancement. But I've also talked to the inclusion of that phrase, for example, in sports. We found that many of our young people would not have an opportunity to grow in sports facilities because of sports activities because there have not been resources in schools. And in our schools, as we partner with education department, if a provision is made, it makes it easy for us when you co-fund and partner with departments and programs and municipal level to then introduce infrastructure support when it comes to sports facilities as well as arts facilities, where we have seen globally that there's economic opportunities in this professions where young people can grow into if they have well-grounded support from school level. Bullet 2 is basically a question to the committee to inquire as to what happens to situations where a province has not provided requirements for them to qualify for incentive components, you know, of allocation in the revenue bill. It's just basically a question. It's not really necessarily a question for amendment of the bill. And lastly, really overall, our submission is the request for the bill to provide for exemption and relaxation of laws and regulations that would provide for SLA entered between the province and local government to include stakeholders in partnerships with relevant and credible NPOs and private sector to really facilitate easy of non-profit organizations' contribution to public service and public interest issues. And also for access to grant for co-funding partnership with relevant and credible partnerships. And as I indicated, we do co-fund, we don't generate revenue from these programs that we implement in program, and therefore we'd appreciate the bill to really allow for that process. Slide 7, my apologies, Chair and honorable members, this is just a repetition. The slide should actually be out. It's a repetition of earlier presentation, earlier slides. Thank you.
Done. Thank you. All the members, there you have it. Any last questions? Can I get hands? Can I get them? On both the blanche?
No, Chairperson. Just as a matter of interest, I think it's slide 4.
Slide 4?
Yes, local government assisting municipalities with building. One would be interested in which municipalities are you currently assisting. Reason why one perceives this here because we are sitting with a problem of municipalities being owed money by national and provincial departments. And the answer you get from these departments is that the billing is wrong. So they owed millions, and I think Treasury knows about that. One would just be interested, are you assisting all municipalities or are they specific ones, and how do they get to be assisted, because it's a major problem at local government level. That's the clarity that I am seeking. Then with agriculture, in assisting with agriculture, would you be assisting subsistence farmers or the small farmers, because that's where the real problem is, that they have the land, they have everything, and to have a healthy nation in our country, they basically need to be assisted. Are you into that or not into that? And then the real estate one, the emerging sector, in all the provinces and the people are way where you are, where they can go first. So those are the few clarities that I want. Thank you.
Honourable Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. This is a very, let's call it a high level presentation. And I think all of us are very keen to allow whatever organization to participate, you know, co-fund. I think that is very good. That is stuff that all of us will appreciate and obviously support, I think. I mean, this is maybe not the purpose of this presentation, but I had a little bit of a difficulty, you know, trying to understand exactly what is this that you want to do. You know, you are mentioning quite a few things that you are interested in and others that apparently you are actively, you know, busy in already, but I'm just thinking, you know, maybe to facilitate and support and direct and whatever this initiative. One, you know, myself, I would have loved to have more detailed information. Just a thought. Thank you, Chairperson. That is just, you know, something that I felt that we need more clarity maybe about. Thank you.
Thank you. Move from the kitty.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got two issues to raise. The first is with regards to the organization itself. I just want to understand as to how the board of the trust is appointed, what process is followed, who appoints. Basically, yes. Also to understand how accountable is Culture Trust to the broader public out there, to the community or communities that you are serving or you are supposed to serve. I want to understand as to whether it will be correct for us to do business with or go into some partnership or encourage partnership between government at various levels on one side and ourselves on the other. Especially, yes, take into account issues of accountability. If you are not that very much accountable, will it be correct for us to encourage that type of partnership? That is the essence of my question. How accountable is Capital Trust? Second question is with regards to what is emphasized throughout the presentation, the issue of partnership in the various programs that you have identified here, wherein you are requesting that Gulfstream Trust or related NGOs be allowed to do work at government level without necessarily having to go through the tender process. The motivation is that you are not in this to make money. You are in this to contribute. You are prepared to co-fund. I want to understand. Are you saying even in terms of costs, you don't have to be paid for those? For the cost of doing whatever you have to do in our municipalities, in government departments. I just want to understand. Thanks.
On global motor shipping.
Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. And thanks, Cultural Trust, for having contributed positively towards my education. Though your standard was very high at the tertiary level, you wanted 60% and above at that stage. For a person to get a buzzer, I was fortunate to get one from a short time. I made this email. Your interest in ECD centers. You know, government is spending money on ECD centers. There's a special grant that has been allocated to ECD. And you are also putting a hand in. I'm not sure if your efforts, together with government efforts, are collaborated, and if there is a linkage, you know, between what you are doing and what government is doing, because it is important. Equally, in terms of your boundaries that you award in scholarships, premiers, municipalities, other institutions, to our brothers. I'm just afraid that he would have a situation where funds are channeled to the same people, same if there is not that linkage in terms of what you are doing and what the other side is doing. These are just my concerns, but thank you.
I noted, Honourable Gaylor.
Yes, Chair, just some clarity. Your early childhood, there are some areas that are very neglected in South Africa. They are rural areas. Are you venturing into that? And worst of all, the whole of South Africa. The children with disabilities are very neglected, especially in those areas. Some with autism and so and so and so. Do you venture in that, or are you able to venture in that? Have you thought of venturing in that area? Thank you.
You may reply.
Thank you so much, honorable members, for the question. The question on assisting municipalities.
Sorry to interrupt you. I didn't see your hand. Oh, your hand is very low.
Yes, I apologize for my late arrival. I could see that you never wanted to point to
the. You speak into the mic? Yeah.
Yes, I've seen that you never wanted to point me because I arrived late. So I'm apologizing. It was not my intention. Maybe I would sound to be irrelevant because I have never heard anything. But you must pardon me. And page 6, it is said community and emerging farmer support. I would like to know how do you support them, the emerging farmers. Because where I come from, it was a former homeland and people were given farms and utensils to use for farming. But they never had any knowledge. They ended up fighting among themselves. That was given to them by apartheid government, former homeland leadership. They ended up fighting among themselves up until these farms ended up being a white elephant. Now I want to know how do you assist with that regard, because there are those who are still trying, but very, very, very difficult. The last question is with regard to page 7. Co-funding with NPOs and the private sector for art facilities for youth and both schools and surrounding communities. How is community, especially from the farms, especially from the rural areas, made aware of the fact that the facilities that we have built there, they can also use them? Because next where I'm living, there is a facility for Kagiso Trust. It has computers and a library. But I have never seen people from the surrounding area using it, unless it is used only by the school and so forth. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Shimangu. You may proceed with your reply. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, the first question was on how we assist the municipalities with the billing system. This program is the only program where we do tendering. So far, we're supporting Gauteng through COGTA, Cooperative Governance Department. And It's a project where we would tender for assisting municipality to clean up their system, but also using electronic system that would assist them to identify, for example, we would say top 100 highly built users and establish why their bills are so huge. In counting Joburg, for example, you have people with bills that went up, goes up beyond 100,000, and you find that they've been wrongly billed. And this is where we do support submission, we send submission to provide that service, and it's paid for by the municipalities. We have so far only worked with Gauteng. The intention was to go to Northwest as well, and as I've indicated, it's mainly on a tender basis, so it's not a co-funded project. On the agriculture, I'll answer this one together with the one on supporting emerging farmers. The agriculture project is a new program, as I indicated in my presentation. And as I said, Gagasa Trust has developed models which they want to help stakeholders adopting or adapting as a best practice tool. So in this socio-economic development program model, which functions both in agriculture and in the construction / real estate, the model looks at three things, which is business skills support. The second thing is funding, which is access to fund, as well as access to market. So the intention of this program is to assist emerging businesses in both agriculture and real estate and construction to be supported in those areas. Funding meaning that we would provide funding that then the businesses, as they grow, they would have terms to pay up a certain amount so that it can be reinvested in other businesses. In terms of the scope or the focus level, it's all farmers. Because the intention is to grow the farmers to commercial level where they can compete with bigger players. And currently we are in the process of negotiating the partnership in terms of establishing a fund with the banks as well as other agriculture big growth players in the industry, in the agriculture sector. The real estate, we have put it on hold because we're going to start with agriculture. But as I indicated, it is really a new program. We have not necessarily engaged or approached farmers to say we have this fund. At this stage, we're at the point of establishing a fund. We have an allocation from Gagasa Trust, and we're negotiating with our partners to pool a bigger fund that will then be invested in the agriculture farmers. It will also include smallholder farmers as well, and emerging SMEs in the sector. Get clarity on the co-funding. I'm not sure if I recall very well, but the reason we want or we taking the co-funding approach is that it makes it, it gives both parties the authority to have a say and have a contribution in terms of legitimizing their roles in the program. But also we have found that because without co-funding, it means we must tender. And therefore the tender process doesn't necessarily fast track or make it easy for accessing, and government doesn't really tender for putting laboratories and science because it's within the government. But because we know the urgency of the need to provide this kind of infrastructure, for example in our schools, we have found it necessary that we should partner with government and contribute, especially in rural areas where these services don't come quickly as needed. We have co-funded now with in education with the province of Limpopo. It's a new program, but we're working with the department through the NECT agency. So it's funds that is already allocated to the education agency that then we co-fund with. On the issue of the board and the trust, how the board and the trust, the board is appointed and who appoints the trust, is a new person who started last year. I would not be able to answer to that, but we can revert back to the member from the office if need be. I think that would go together with the issue of how we're accountable. So as a non-profit organization, we have our reports in terms of what we do, where our funds come from, and how we use them. So the information is available. And we do, in communities where we work, there are stakeholder organizations or forums, and that's where reports are given and feedback is given in terms of the utilization and the implementation of the program. Thank you, Chair and the honorable members. I would want to respond to, firstly, the gentleman that asked about the details and clarity. Until 2016, for the past 30 years, Perfect Trust was mainly concentrating on education. Then at the end of the 30 years, we had to revisit how we contribute because we are about development. And then the socioeconomic development she is talking to came about in 2016, only in 2016, as a result of that strategy review and the institutional capacity development only also came there. And the ECD, because we were, yes, in education, but in primary schools and secondary schools. Now we are only introducing ECD recently. So the other programs are pretty new. The ECD, the SED, and the institutional capacity development, which talks to the civil society. However, what I would like to bring to the attention, on the bursaries, yes, we have done bursaries before, but the way we do them now, we don't give bursaries anyhow. We only allow children that went to the high schools where we make interventions. So as a way of continuing with their tertiary education. So it happens sometimes that the department, as we partner with the Department of Education, takes our students and then Capital Trust takes the remaining. But it's a minimal number which we are trying to pursue to increase, because we will take about 15 or so students. We would like to increase it to up to 50 or 100. We are still working on that. Again, on the accountability, we are audited as an organization by WaterPriceCoopers, and the monies that are invested by the department are also accounted for. We have been accounting to the Auditor General as well on the partnership with the department. And then another honorable member asked about the contribution that we make on the municipalities. As my colleague has already mentioned, that we have been contributing through tendering. However, as a development agency, our board members are saying, we can't be taking money from the government we are assisting. That is why now we are looking at the local economic development aspect of it. She she spoke to on the presentation, because in tendering, consultants come and they make or they respond to that particular problem, and then they walk away. Once they walk away, the problem might still crop up or persist again. So we are saying we want to partner in terms of making that difference in the communities, not necessarily to gain something from the partnership, but to impact and make a difference in the community. And we have also noted the contribution on the ECD, the Autism and Disability. Kagiso Trust previously has worked on ECD and specifically with disabled children and communities. However, as I said that we have reviewed the strategy, the board now is saying, can we not repeat what we have done previously? Can we be more innovative? We are at the stage now of piloting on what is there, what are the gaps in the ECD, and how can then we respond as an organization? I think that's all. Thank you so much.
You done?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your presentation. All the members, we're going straight to the next one, that's Equal Education. Mr. Kenyon, I'll give you the opportunity after the presentations that you make your remarks. We will also be having our negotiating mandates next Tuesday, the 24th. We at Treasury will also be present to make their inputs there. Equal Education, you're welcome.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is P. Lim Dombela Mason. I am a researcher at Equal Education. I'm here to present to you our submission on the Division of Revenue. It's a joint submission with our sister organisation, the Equal Education Law Centre. So first and foremost, just to allow you to know who we are, Equal Education is a membership-based democratic movement of learners, parents, teachers, and community members. We work towards achieving quality and equality in the South African education system. We do this by a broad range of activities, including campaigns, grounding research, policy analyses, support of public action and mobilization, and where necessary, we use legal processes, which is where the Equal Education Law Center comes in. They are a public interest law center using legal advocacy to advance an equitable and quality basic education for all. Our core membership is high school learners known as equalizers, and they actively advocate for quality in their schools and in their communities across the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, and Gauteng. So first and foremost, I'd like to speak to you about a conditional grant for learner transport. Since 2014, equalizers in an area called Mutu in northern KwaZulu-Natal have raised an issue of the lack of transport as a serious barrier to their education. Often these learners traverse dangerous terrain and threatening situations in order to get to school. This has been a massive cause of absenteeism, struggling to concentrate in classes, and dropping out completely. Therefore, with this in mind, having this problem as part of our movement, Equal Education as a whole has consistently advocated for adequate funding for learner transport policy. This has included multiple presentations to the Standing Committee on Appropriations and the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. On the next slide, there is a table there. This table is an adaptation of the latest presentation by the Human Science Research Council. They presented this to the Standing Committee on Appropriations in the past month. These stats depict the number of learners by year who live far from school, and then the number of learners who lack the transport to get to school from that area that is far from school. As you can see, the numbers are quite high of these learners, and according to the Human Research Council, in 2016, over 100,000 learners dropped out in the whole country from school due to, and they cited a lack of adequate transport to take them to school as their main reasoning. So provincial education departments often cite inadequate funding as the main reasons for not being able to provide transport to learners who qualify. Currently, provinces have to use their equitable share to fund this program from their position. And often, it is either, in each province it differs, some provinces it is funded through the Department of Transport, and some provinces it's funded through the Department of Education. We have noted in a lot of our research that what happens in provinces is that they work in silos, and so the Department of Transport may have one number, whereas the Department of Education has a different number, and there's not much inter-departmental communication within these. We've also noted that the budget for transport is often the first cut when provinces face budgetary pressure. And although having negotiated and spoken to both National Treasury, the Appropriations Committee, Education Committees, and having litigated in KwaZulu-Natal against the Provincial Department of Education to provide buses to the schools in Kutu, which are the most affected area, and having received a favorable judgment on that in that sense, the 2018 Division of Revenue Board still makes no mention of a possible conditional grant for scholar transport. It is on this call that we urge this committee, as part of the National Council of Provinces and the Standing Committee on Appropriations, which we've done so beforehand, to please recommend to Treasury that learners in this country have the basic right to education, and therefore barriers like this should not be the reason for them to not achieve this right. So we would call for a conditional grant for learner transport throughout the country. My next topic will be the issue of the spending of school infrastructure grants. When I say school infrastructure grants, I'm speaking specifically to the school's infrastructure backlogs grant and to the education infrastructure grant. One is provided as a transfer to provinces, which is doled out by National Treasury or the Provincial Treasury.
Excuse me, are you now on this page?
No, I'm past that page.
You must please indicate because your page is on another.
I'm on the seventh page. I'm sorry, there are no page numbers. It's the first one to say school infrastructure grant spending. The first bullet says EE has long campaigned.
Please indicate when you go to the next page because
we
get lost.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Great. So, Equal Education has long campaigned for safe and adequate school infrastructure. In this year's budget, we saw the first deep cuts made to the infrastructure grant since the promulgation of the legally binding minimum norms and standards for school infrastructure, which were published in 2013. We know that Treasury has cited that the Department of Basic Education and the Provincial Education Department have consistently underspent their allocations from these grants, which has been the reason why the grants have been cut. Both grants have been cut by almost $7 billion over the MTF period. To the next slide, where there's a graph. This shows the ACD program, which falls under the School Infrastructure Backlogs grant. This shows the slowness to implementation. It illustrates the DBE has been very, very slow in building schools through this nationally administered grant. The yellow bars show how many schools have an issue of a backlog. A backlog can be no water, no adequate sanitation, no electricity. It can also mean that schools are made of dangerous materials such as mud, asbestos, or even wood. The yellow bars show the backlog. The gray bars show the number of schools that have been allocated to the implementing agent. And the black bars show the schools that have been completed. Head to the next page now. These backlogs, according to the laws, should have been addressed by the 29th of November 2016. This is the first infrastructure delivery deadline set by these minimum norms and standards. According to this deadline, all schools made of inappropriate materials should have been replaced, and all schools should have been provided with basic amenities. In a basic education portfolio committee in March this year, the DBE presented to the members that the current national backlogs was as followed. 178 projects of school of inappropriate structures needed to be addressed still. 539 sanitation programs had not been completed. 586 programs providing clean water to schools had not been completed. And 393 electricity schools have not been electrified. A number of factors contribute to this underspending. The Department of Basic Education has for one cited that across most provincial education departments, there were 252 vacant posts. The responsibility for building schools has also not fallen directly on the DBE and the TEDs alone, due to the lack of technical and project management capacity within the state. Instead, the government has allocated construction programs to organizations which are called implementing agents. When discussing the significant deviations from the planned infrastructure delivery targets of specifically the ACD program, one of the reasons cited, even by the Director General of the Department of Basic Education, has been poor performance by these implementing agents. So the following slide, I say, National Treasury and the Provincial Treasuries have largely allowed this program's autonomy. However, this learner's implementation is consistently resulting in reductions to the grants, which leaves South Africa's young people to languish in schools made of dangerous materials and lack of basic sanitation and amenities. In the following slide, I will be giving our recommendations. As EE and the Equal Education Law Center, we would ask that this committee recommend the following to provincial treasuries. We ask that the treasuries in the provinces must publish according to infrastructure reporting models in order to report and make public the information on underperforming implementing agents. We ask that they should provide training to implementing agents as well as provincial education departments on the importance of adding delinquent contractors to National Treasury's database on restricted suppliers. This is especially important when implementing agents come in year by year and show 100% deviation on plans to build. Provincial Treasury should also report with recommendations on how to expedite the payments by the provincial education departments to the implementing agents and contractors. They should also assist in properly spending and not wasting the funds allocated to hire qualified professionals within the provincial education department's infrastructure units. And they must also provide provincial treasuries, also train provincial education department infrastructure units on how to properly use the standard for infrastructure procurement and delivery models, which would facilitate proper and detailed infrastructure planning. Furthermore, with regards to National Treasury, we note that National Treasury has always exercised their, my apologies, I see that the slide is not available on my slides, but I'll just read it out. While National Treasury always exercises its oversight function of the spending of conditional grants and does tend to intervene when provinces are under-resourced or under-capacitated, with special regards to the Eastern Cape, it can make its interventions more functional by enacting the following. By assisting the education departments in the provinces to properly spend and not waste funds allocated to hire qualified professionals, according to the human resource capacitation pilot, they can train the infrastructure units on how to properly use the system, which would facilitate proper and detailed infrastructure planning. They should also review regulation on management fees, which can be charged by consultants, professional service providers, and implementing agents, and that do not use up most of the grants, which are for learners and for schools, on paying people. Thank you. My next slide will be a discussion on the revision of the equitable share formula. We have previously presented to the Standing Committee on Appropriations regarding a possible review to the equitable share formula. Our main concerns were the failure of the formula to cater for the high costs of delivering education to rural provinces. And therefore, we welcome National Treasury's commitment to reviewing this formula, but we are awaiting the timeframes of the review process to be made public. We also note that the first phase of review is underway, including a change from using the school reality surveys in the case of education to the learner unit record information tracking system, which is far more precise. To the next slide. We note that the equitable share formula directly affects provinces, and we request that this committee and hopefully the provincial treasuries would agree with us that to recommend to National Treasury that a further phase of the equitable share formula review takes into account the high cost of providing education in rural provinces. Factors that increase the cost of rural education include the historic underfunding of the former homeland areas, which account for the largest part of the country's rural regions, geographic-specific issues such as low population densities, reduce the potential for economies of scale. What this means is that when schools have a relatively small learner number in relatively small areas, each school has to have a principal. Each school has to have a head of department. Each school needs teachers. And I'll come to explain now why this particularly affects rural provinces. This will be on the next slide. These factors increase the cost of rural education, such as, for example, infrastructure disadvantage, such as disparities in access to basic services, which is, again, a product of our authoritarian history. Demographically, rural area population has a high proportion of children and of older people, while the working age population is more dominant in urban areas, meaning that education will cost more in rural areas. Furthermore, Statistics South Africa has noted that poverty rate stood at 68.8% in rural areas in 2011 as compared to 13.9% in urban areas. Please move on to the next slide. We know that Treasury is exploring the possibility of adding a rural focused indicator to the provincial equitable share formula to further strengthen the equity of intergovernmental transfer. And we know that there are, according to the expenditure memorandum of this year's Division of Revenue Bill, that Treasury is considering these reviews as per the FFC's recommendations. And we welcome these commitments, particularly in light of our submission. We have also commissioned a report on the mechanisms by which the equitable share formula could be adjusted. My apologies, I'm on the next slide. To ensure more effective redress. This report was presented to National Treasury along with provincial treasuries. This report included exploring ways in which the formula could be improved by investigating two options. First and foremost, adjusting the provincial share by a geographical factor that favors rurality, and adjusting the provincial share by a focus that takes into account the relative distribution of schools in each province across the five quintiles, rather than just the volume of learners. We note that the issue of rurality is often rejected as a legitimate factor by urban provinces who note that they receive a high number of learners who migrate from the rural provinces. While this is in fact true and noteworthy, we note that it is important to take into consideration the historical underfunding of the rural provinces, the low population densities, and the apartheid era infrastructure backlogs which ensure that these provinces remain on the back foot, and this requires far more resources than their urban counterparts. Please move to the next slide. One example that I want to give is that only 46.7% of Gauteng schools, which is an urban province, are quintile 1 to 3 schools. Quintile 1 to 3 schools are completely dependent on the government for funding. They cannot levy fees because they have to teach the poorest of the poor and also the working class learners. And furthermore, in 2017, the Eastern Cape enrollments made up 14% of the national school enrollments, but the province is home to 23% of all schools in the country. Gauteng, on the other hand, enrollments made up 18% of the national enrollments, but the schools in the province amounted to 9% of all schools. In the next slide, I describe that KZN has 25% more learners than Gauteng, but 166% more schools. Such is the reality of rural provinces, and therefore economies of scale cannot be reached because of the low population densities. Each school comes with its own cost, and therefore pushes the cost of providing education. There's also a larger demand for services, such as scholar transports in rural provinces, and providing these services is substantially more expensive than in urban provinces due to the distances. Therefore, my last slide notes that Equal Education and ELC would therefore ask this committee to discuss and encourage National Treasury to consider adding morality as a factor to the equitable share formula. Thank you. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Thank you for your submission. Honourable members, questions? I note Honourable Greller, Honourable Shibangu, Honourable Blanche, in that order.
Thank you. I'm Van Matomen. One is to welcome your presentation. And you are saying what, unfortunately, I've been saying even in Parliament as well. I 100% agree with you. And I also agree with you about the implementing agents. Most of the money goes to implementing agents. Whether you like it, you don't like it. That is because of lack of capacity within public works.
whose mandate is to build government infrastructure. So I agree with you on all this here. I just wanted to say that I 100% agree with you on this one here. No questions at all. Thank you.
Ms. Bongo?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My simple question would be with regard to the criteria that is used in order to get the membership. Because according to my way of seeing things, the province where I come from is not included here. And it is the most vulnerable, if not a node, because President Mbeki declared it a node long ago. Up until today, it's still a node. But it doesn't appear. And it is the most province that get the best results amongst all the provinces, which is Free State, but it's not Kitati. Number two, with regard to adequate funding for learners' transport. Sometimes it becomes a joke when you deal with especially the black learners in the Free State. The present reigning government once bought the bicycles for the farmers. Children coming from the farm. You can imagine traveling about 10 kilometers with a bicycle and training a girl, a child for that matter. And those bicycles were not serviced. They are no more there. And those children are traveling on foot in most cases. And I think it would be of utmost importance if this matter can be taken in consideration and be attended to. Thank you very much.
Honorable Dr. Blanche.
Chairperson, thank you. I also want to commend the lady on the presentation that she made. A sizable chunk of state income is spent on education, and that is obviously one of the most important focus areas. But I must admit, I'm also concerned, you know, at the moment, and she referred to that, is the fact, the inability of government to spend allocated amounts. Now, you can obviously, it doesn't make sense, you know, appropriating more money and people cannot even spend what they have. So we are dealing with a vicious circle. Then also, if you listen to the whole inequality between the rural areas and, you know, more urban areas, I really think that there is a need that education or whoever needs to revisit the whole way that we are providing schools and to come up with a model that will be working. You know, even oversight the maintenance of school chairperson, you know, if you go to this rural area, people don't spend their money, and then there are shortage of very, very basic services. So I also don't have a specific question. I just want to also express our concern. As a DA, we really want to express our concern about what is happening in education and the inability to spend this money and to ensure that our children are going to get the best possible education. Thank you, Jefferson.
Any other questions? Or honorable members, it's our responsibility to visit our schools at least 3 times a year to monitor and evaluate the condition of the school and the quality of education delivered at that school. And then engage immediately with your member of the Executive Council for Education in that province, the MEC, and the HUD, and the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Education and the provincial legislator. Excuse me. That is very crucial. I'm deployed in a rural area, one of the most rural areas you can get. But our region, the Namakwa region, is for the 7th year the top region in the Northern Cape. Yes. Inclusive high standards. And if you've got the high standard, you must keep it there. Don't reduce it. I note you, Honorable Gary, you are very active today. And then Honorable McKerry.
No, no, it's important, Chief. You know I respect you as a seasoned politician. You're one of the best guys that I respect. What you are saying is true. But when you deal with us as opposition, when we go there, we are not respected. What we say is nothing in those provinces. That's a difference. For instance, on Mandela's Day on the 80th, I'm going to invite her. I'm going to hold it at a school that's got nothing. Nothing. They don't even have a road. I'm going to pay for that to show the world what is happening. So we are not respected as opposition. We go to these MECs and all that too. They don't even listen to what we're saying. So that's where the problem is. So you are better off than myself as a member of parliament. That's the unfortunate truth of the matter.
Bring that school issue to this committee. We will deal with it. We will deal with it. That's why we are deployed here. Honorable Monakiri.
Thanks for the presentation. And indeed for the pertinent issues that have been raised. Fortunately, and by your own admission, Treasury is already moving towards making sure that the issues we are raising here are getting the necessary attention with regards to ensuring that going forward there are some indicators, I think as you have indicated here, that should be included, which will end up with rural areas being favored. As against urban areas. For me, what is critical, I think it's a point that has been made earlier on, even in the presentation, I think you covered it, the challenge of capacity or lack thereof on the part of relevant departments in terms of ensuring that budgets allocated, especially for infrastructure, are spent 100% at the end of the financial year. The problem is not necessarily with the implementing agents. The problem is with those that are supposed to hold implementing agents accountable. They are not doing their work in terms of ensuring that those implementing agents do their work. And if they don't, obviously there has to be consequences. So I think our responsibility is to ensure that relevant officials, relevant departments, MECs and ministers are actually up to scratch in ensuring that these programs, these budgets are fully implemented come the end of the financial year. I think that is what we need to be focusing on going forward. Thanks.
Thank you. You may reply. You're welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you all for your responses and thank you for engaging with my presentation.
Sorry. Just before you go further, are you represented in each province?
No.
The reason I'm asking, we have public hearings on the bill in 9 provinces. So it would be very helpful if your organization, excuse me, attend these, if you are deployed these hearings.
Thank you. We are represented in 5 of the 9 provinces. However, this is, I appreciate that because I think that it would be great if we had an equalizer come to, which is our school going members, come to present their lived reality in light of the bill. So I will definitely pass that on to my superiors as something that needs to be done. One of the members asked me what is the criteria for becoming a member. Does that mean an equal education member? The criteria for becoming a member, an equal education member? Yes. We are, so long as there's an issue in your school and you can mobilize your classmates or your community members and you get into contact with us, we will deploy a researcher and a national council member to come and to do some field research and to understand the issues going on and report back to our national council. Because we're a democratic structure, they would have to vote, but usually if there's a scope of a need, we will make ourselves available for it. This is how we actually began doing advocacy in Limpopo and KZN because of a similar structure. So, but it does have to come from the school-going learners' perspective or parents. We can't just bring ourselves into people's environment. They have to ask us then because that's how, you know, participatory democracy has to work. And I think with regards to another question about education and having a lion's share, I think it was Honourable Terblanche, you said education is the lion's share. I agree with you. And I think that one misconception that we tend to have is that this money, I think I've heard people often say, the amount of money that is given to education isn't, it's not too much. Unfortunately, we are a very young country, and the NDP goals are very, very... we set very high goals according to that, specifically for education. Therefore, the amount that's given to education is probably good. It's just over this year, we've seen downward adjustments to baseline allocations. And with the lack of spending of grants, I think that this is why we made those recommendations. We feel that Treasury should actually intervene, as much as we note that they often don't like to get involved in the grant. They are the ones giving out the grants, and they're the ones that are going to downwardly adjust the grants if they're not spend it. So therefore, we would like for them to, in some level and within reason, intervene in the processes, including the ensuring that the people that are hired are trained adequately, ensuring that implementing agents don't charge surge prices for things that, because they feel like, oh, it's government money, it's taxpayer money, we can ask for a lot when actually this is unreasonable, and they're using up grants that are meant to help public schools. Thank you again. Thank you.
You covered, Honourable Members? Yes, Honourable Shimon.
I never heard the lady talking with regard to the learner's transport, especially in rural areas, because at times I've alluded to the fact that the transport is leaving much to be desired, especially in the Free State. And at times, even the taxis that ferry the scholars from school to home, they sort of not have petrol at times they're not paid, and it really affects the scholars.
Thank you for sensitizing that point. You noted that. You want to say something about it?
Yes, I can say something too. I agree with the Honourable Member, which is the point of our presentation, is that we feel like with a conditional grant, the scope of need across the country must be noted, and then monies must be ring-fenced for this reason, to ensure that each and every learner that lives far and falls within the distances that have been discussed, such as 5 kilometres, 10 kilometres, have the adequate transport, and it is government-funded, and it is set aside and, you know, doled out by Treasury to each province to ensure that it is given. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephen?
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to respond. And I think just from the Treasury side, we'd like to note our appreciation for the inputs from both Kukiso Trust and Equal Education. On the Kukiso Trust presentation, if I can just comment to the committee, I mean, I think we really understand the issue that Kirkito is raising, that around the obstacles to non-profit organizations collaborating on government projects. I think that was broadly the theme of the presentation. And we're very familiar with this, where because of the kind of procurement rules and things in government, it is often difficult for a charitable organization to do part of a project that is also government funded. We've come across this in several sectors, so it's not something new to us. I think because this is a public hearing on the Division of Revenue Bill, it's incumbent on me to note to the committee that the main obstacle to that collaboration is not the Division of Revenue Bill rules. It's got much more to do with the Public Finance Management Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act, and Municipal Systems Act kind of rules about how procurement is done, et cetera, et cetera. And that's also not to say that it's impossible to do these collaborative projects. In my work, we've come across it quite recently. We presented to the committee that we would be this year reviewing the way our human settlements funding works. And one of the cases there that we've come across is where in informal settlement upgrading, those projects often work best where you've got a community organization that is like a trust of various community members that are then able to engage and facilitate the reblocking process. There are even some of these schemes where there are savings by members that they want to contribute, and then the municipality is then the main funder, and then there's this kind of disjuncture between what the municipality is doing and what they're doing. There are similar examples on the kind of sports facilities and community centres and things that Kakisa Trust has raised. And there are municipalities that have found practical ways around some of these issues. So I think part of the response there needs to be around that kind of knowledge sharing on what the practical ways to overcome this are, because I think we all agree, and particularly from the Treasury side, we like the co-funding model. You might assume Treasury likes any co-funding where anyone else is willing to make a contribution, but we particularly like the co-funding because it indicates a broader social commitment to the infrastructure, and usually the infrastructure that's built through one of those things is much better managed and maintained, and that's the real dividend, is then in the kind of community involvement in managing and maintaining these things, so that they don't become, particularly these kind of community facilities, that they don't become white elephants. So I really welcome that from the presentation. I think there were three broad issues that Equal Education spoke about, so if I can go through them in turn. First, on the learner transport grant, I mean, we've had extensive engagement on this issue over several years. The Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is currently leading a performance and expenditure review on the scholar transport issue across all of the provinces, reviewing how that function is being performed. And based on the outcomes of that work, we will then look at what appropriate changes to the funding model are required. So there is a process in place to respond to that issue. I should just note that I think that a conditional grant is not necessarily a silver bullet in any function, and that is as true of this one. So just making it a conditional grant would not automatically mean that there's more resources available, and making it a conditional grant, depending on how it's designed, etc. I mean, we've had in many cases problems with the implementation of conditional grant programs, especially in the first year, that people get kind of tied up in new rules and things. So I would just caution that we automatically assume that if there was a grant, it would solve all problems, because we know that that's not our experience of the introduction of new grants. So we just a note of caution there. But as I say, if a conditional grant is the right response, then obviously we will look at that. Then on the performance of infrastructure grants, I mean, I think we don't disagree with the diagnosis from Equal Education, and I think It's interesting to note that in their presentation, including in the missing slide that wasn't included in the pack, a lot of what Equal Education are pointing to as remedies are tweaks to things that National Treasury and Provincial Treasury are already doing. They refer to the infrastructure reporting model that we've introduced, the standards for infrastructure procurement, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we share the kind of frustration that a lot of the interventions that we've made haven't already delivered the results in terms of the change that we'd like to see, and we're happy to explore further tweaks to those models. I think that the member who highlighted that a lot of the problem is with the accountability for the implementation of those measures. I mean, there has been over decades a lot of support provided to enable the capacitation, and I think your point on accountability really hits the nail on the head. And then lastly, with regards to the provincial equitable share formula, I know that we've briefed the committee already on the equitable share formula review that is ongoing, so I won't go into that in too much detail here, but just to say that, I mean, we have engaged, as Equal Education notes, we met with Equal Education to take this input last year, and I mean, to say on a personal level, as someone who works day in and day out with these formulas, it's fantastic to have people who pay so much attention to the instrument. Not everyone looks in as much detail as they have, so it's really gratifying for us, and it's nice to be able to engage with that. Having said that, it is difficult to make changes to something as complex as the equitable share formula, which funds the whole of provincial government based on a single issue input. So, I mean, the provincial equitable share formula funds all of the administration in the province, all of the schools, all of the healthcare facilities, all of the social development work, all of the agriculture, the transport, etc. It funds those broad range of things, and I think that while it's Equal Education's interest, and it's really great that Equal Education raises this particular issue, It would be wrong of us to make a change to the formula based on just that one aspect, because you might find that a change that you think is responding to a particular issue in education ends up having consequences that result in, say, a health department in a province suddenly being underfunded because the equitable share formula funds provincial functions as a whole. So that is why we have this comprehensive review of the formula as a whole that is done together with the nine provinces through the Technical Committee of Finance and ultimately the Budget Council. But we note that the Equal Education is well aware of that process and has contributed to it, and also that the particular rural issues that they are raising will be addressed in a colloquium on rural issues, because these rural issues are so complicated, and we're very grateful to the Financial and Fiscal Commission for hosting that colloquium later this year. I should also just note that, I mean, we're not trying to push this down the road by having a review, and I don't want members to have the impression that rural areas are being underfunded at the moment while this work is going on. I think if you look at that slide that we presented, I think, for the last 2 years, that shows the per capita allocations from the provincial equitable share, and it shows that the more rural provinces get more per person than the urban provinces. I think Northern Cape gets 70% more per person than Gauteng gets, and I think it would be difficult to look at that outcome from the formula as a whole and say that it's biased against rural provinces. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, we will be dealing with the spending on the conditional grants as part of our program for the second term. There's a couple of meetings, so And education, if I remember correctly, is one of them, that we go deeper into the matters then. Thank you. Thank you for Kirgisho Trust, for Equal Education, and for National Treasury, for your submissions of the members, with your permission that we release them. We've got housekeeping matters, minutes, etc. The handwritten submission from Mr. Matlala was also circulated, that we note this and become part of our minutes and the content as well. So we acknowledge that. Thank you. You are released. I think there's coffee tea outside, so you are welcome to have a cup of tea or coffee. Honorable members, that brings us to... Pardon? What's the matter you want to raise? Honorable members, we go to the minutes as indicated on our agenda. The minutes of the 20th of February, 2018. Budget briefing by the Parliamentary Budget Office, the PBO. I put to honourable members page 1. The 20th of February 2018. 10 o'clock in the morning, Committee Room 4B475, the PBO presentation. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Then we go to the minutes of the 22nd of February, briefing by the Minister of Finance on the 2018 budget. In this committee room, E249, I put to all the members page 1. These pages are not numbered. Page 1. All those present and not present, page 2. Introduction, presentation by the Minister and National Treasury, the new Director General. Page 3, issues raised. And the last page. Members, the minutes of the 22nd of February, on the Kelly moves for adoption, seconded by. Can I get a seconder? Who has present? Thank you. You were not here. Honorable de Blanche, you were present. Can you second? Thank you. Seconded by Honorable de Blanche. All the members, that takes us to the minutes of the 27th of February. The briefing by the PBO post the budget and the fiscal, financial and fiscal commission. There you've got page 1. Those who are present. Page 2, introduction, submission by the FFC. Excuse me. Page 3. Summary of the FFC submission, issues raised by members, page 4. B.B. Bush presentation. Page 5. Issues that was raised. And the closing remarks. Page 4. 5 and 6. I put the minutes of the 27th of February to the committee. Move for adoption on Bogalia moves on Bush Bongo. I can't hear you. Sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm saying I don't recall being absent without any reason, unless if I was not yet a member of this committee.
Honourable members, the signing of the signing of the attendance register is a crucial part of every meeting. It's very crucial. And if a member is not present, a written apology must be submitted. So that's the rule. Noshipu can go and check the attendance register. She files it. Yeah, she's good at record keeping as well. Honourable members, I put the minutes of the 27th of February on Bulgaria move for adoption. Can I get a seconder? Honourable Motla Shuping second. The 20th of March, where is that one? Oh, here it is. Sorry. Briefing by the National Treasury on the Division of Revenue Bill 2018, submissions by the FFC and SAGA on the Division of Revenue Bill. I put the members page 1. All in attendance. Fantastic. Page 2. Very strong team, also from the Free States, and the Popo, and Northern Cape. page 3 on the members. Presentation by the National Treasury on the Division of Revenue Bill 2018. Page 4, issues raised by the committee. This will definitely feature in our report. That will be tabled in the NCLP, in the plenary, submissions by FFC and SAGA. It's very crucial that SAGA attends the provincial public hearings on the Division of Revenue Bill as well. That is very important. Page 5 and 6, members, I put to you the minutes of the 20th of March. Move for adoption on the Motla Shuping moves and on both Shibangu second. Thank you, honourable members. Deliberations on the joint oversight visit to Owar Tambo District Municipality. We had a management meeting yesterday just looking at the broad framework and our committee report on the Owar Tambo District Municipality, with which we engaged in Parliament, forms the basis, the departure point. So the staff will go and do a draft that we will engage members with. It's the area where Ombugela is deployed. He lives there. We will also engage with other colleagues of us in the Eastern Cape, but we tasked it the staff component to come up with a framework, and then we will look at that. There was a WIPS meeting this morning. I don't know what was the outcome of the WIPS meeting, because it will affect the program, whatever they decided on. We are waiting for our WIPS to give us some feedback there. So between now and tomorrow, we will get that feedback as well. Our next engagement is next Tuesday, the 24th, when we will be dealing with the negotiating mandates from the members, and that to engage with your provincial office at Constitution House and your your legislator and your chair of finance in the legislature that they get their negotiating mandates ready. When must it begin with you? Monday the 23rd. Monday the 23rd before? Monday, Tuesday morning before 9 o'clock. That is the latest. But it's our responsibility as members from our provinces to do that follow-up. Thank you, all my members. Thank you for your presence. I wish you well for the second term, 11 weeks. This, and the staff, thank you for arranging this meeting. This meeting stands adjourned.